Chapter 7. There would only be one chance to board the land train. It would come as the orc juggernaut started up the slope towards reclamation. The road that the train followed passed through a cut in a low hill at the foot of the main slope. The cliff walls on either side of the road were sheer and about 10 meters high. They were close together, too. There would barely be space for the train to pass between them. When it did, that would be the 8th Company's best chance to board. Staying just beneath the brow of the hill, the Raven Guard would be invisible to the orcs until the last moment. Even so, a distraction was needed. If the greenskin engineer had the time to trigger the defences, they might still be enough to sweep Krivan and his men from the roof. And then the savage machine would not stop until reclamation was a ruin. Krivan needed all of the engineer's attention focused elsewhere. His strategy called for a secondary attack, one ferocious enough to resemble the main event. He would take the strength of one combat squad onto the train. As he disembarked from the Claw of Deliverance on the other side of the hill from the train's approach, he addressed the company over the vox.
"Brothers," he said, "I want a direct frontal assault on the enemy. Step out of the shadows, and you will create the ones from which our death blow will come."
A chorus of acknowledgements followed as he took his squad to the ambush point.
"We will attempt to gain access through a roof hatch?" Thane asked.
"No," Krivan told the tech marine. "We should keep our exposure in that position to the bare minimum. As soon as that greenskin tech has any idea of what we are doing, it will hit us with that armament. We'll go down in between the cars."
In position, the 5 space marines listened to the land train close in. They could not see it, but the reports of their brothers painted the picture of the battle. The Claw of Deliverance launched the assault, raining missiles at the locomotive. The engine drove through the flames. One of the rockets gouged a crater in the road before it. This was no obstacle. The treaded beast dealt with it as it would a simple unevenness in the road. There was no pause in the train's relentless drive forward. As the engine passed through the fire of the Thunderhawk's assault, the second phase of the attack began. Just beyond the cut, waiting on either side of the hill, were the venerable brothers Karom and Roust. The dreadnoughts of the 8th Company, dropped off by the gunship, now had their moment in a war that had, since the first ambush, been a series of rapid deployments. They were not fast, but they, too, were creatures of the shadows. They were the hammer blow of night, their attacks as devastating as they were unexpected. They lit up the Orc Tech's blister with fire that could level a fortress. Karom struck with las cannon, Roust with multi-melter. Any other vehicle would have died in that moment, its armor pierced and melted to slag. The orc engineer's mad genius of excess stymied the dreadnoughts. The force field, powerful beyond any rational conception, absorbed the hits and dissipated their energy along the entire length of the train. For a second after each blast from the dreadnought's weapons, the line of cars flashed a sun-bright green and crackled with violet lightning. The locomotive was undamaged. The engineer exulted inside its blister. Karom and Roust continued firing. They could not overload the force field, but the blinding discharge of energy dazzled the orc. The rest of the company joined the attack. 7 assault squads poured fire at the greenskin. Their shells came at it from all angles. 70 space marines, maneuvering by jump pack, rose and fell before the land train. Their movements were constant, rapid,
erratic. They gave the Orc engineer no concentration of targets upon which to retaliate. They were a jagged constellation of war stretching across the arc of the horizon. The assault squads, Dreadnoughts and Thunderhawk, hit the train with a force to level cities. The craters multiplied, turning the land into a moonscape. The Orc machine roared on, as if it were the brutal war lust of the greenskins given metal form. Perhaps it was, Krivan thought, as the disbelieving reports flooded the Vox. He had seen enough earlier to know that they would not stop the train through direct means. All of his brothers had, too, but the force field's strength defied reason. There was something malign at work on Lepidus Prime. It manifested itself in everything from the unusual size and strength of the Orc foot soldiers to the mad invincibility of the land train. This was different from what the Imperium had fought on Armageddon. There, the Greenskins had been directed by a leader of unholy skill, one whose threat, Krivan was certain, was still not fully appreciated. The Orcs on Lepidus Prime seemed transformed. It wasn't leadership that was animating them. It was something else, something that touched their very being and all the works that flowed from it. Unharmed though the train was, the Orc tech retaliated as though threatened with imminent destruction. It unleashed the armament in full. Turret cannons opened up, rockets flew in swarms. The accuracy of the bombardment was non-existent, but it blanketed everything ahead of the train. The engineer didn't have to aim. If it made the world explode, its enemies would die in that fireball. Krivan blinked through the readouts of his helmet lenses. He saw one rune after another turn red, then dark, his brothers giving their lives in an attack that was only a diversion, an attack that was, by its nature, doomed to failure. The battle had been raging for less than a minute. The train was still pulling its length through the cut. Thane said, "Our losses are growing." He was hearing the same reports. He spoke without emotion, offering an observation, evaluating a situation on the point of deteriorating. "Yes," Krivan said. "I will honor every death," he thought. Every battle brother who had fallen had purchased them the hope of victory. "Now," he snarled. Shadows flowed over the hill. Giants in armor became wraiths. Though it was day, the lethal touch of the night reached for the train. Krivan leapt. He landed on the roof of the second car. The rest of the squad followed. The sound of the impact of their boots vanished under the hill-shaking din of the guns and the engine. The Space Marines stayed low beneath the fire of the turrets. Krivan looked across the roof of the next car to the locomotive. The engineer was visible in its bubble. The hunched figure was facing forward, riveted by the unfolding inferno of war.
"Over the roofs?"
Dvarax voxed. Natural speech was impossible, even if it wouldn't have given their position away.
"No," Krivan said.
If the Greenskin's attention wavered from the front for an instant and he saw them, it would redirect the turrets their way. They had to use the time bought for them to get beyond the reach of the guns. Crouching, Krivan moved to the gap between the first and second cars. He looked down. There was no platform between them. The coupling was a grotesque conglomeration of pistons, chains, and spikes. It made little mechanical sense. It was excessive, it was inefficient, and it was dangerous. Every element of the land train had been weaponized. Any being not heavily armored that tried to stand on the coupling would be ground to blood and meat by the moving metal. There were doors leading into each car. By contrast to the coupling, they were simple affairs, nothing more than hinged, uneven rectangles. It was as if the makers of the train had grown bored with any elements that could not be put to killing use. Krivan pointed to Dvarax, Reval, and Akralas, then down at the car they were on. He indicated that he and Thane would take the forward car. The squad understood his intent. Kill the sentries, prevent any warning from reaching the engineer. Krivan and Thane leapt over the gap between the cars. Krivan waited for the other three to get into position. Akralas took point. He nodded at the shadow captain. Shadows moved again. Shadows with mass and force. Krivan and Akralas dropped to the coupling. Krivan felt motion beneath his boots like a sea with claws. Gaps opened and closed between the metal with every jolt of movement as the train rumbled over the craters. Krivan grounded himself. His legs moved, adjusting for the motions of the grasping iron. His upper body was motionless. He reached out and grasped the door by a protrusion on its right edge.
Ready? He voxed Akralas. Ready.
The doors opened out, so they struck in two beats. Krivan yanked his door off its hinges. He lunged inside as Akralas hauled the other open. The other members of the squad followed. Krivan knew Thane was at his back before he had taken two steps into the car. Before him was a cluster of surprised orcs. There were four infantry, aiming their guns outside the metal-shuttered windows. They struggled to bring their weapons back in, getting the barrels stuck against the narrow frames. Krivan dismissed them to the edge of his attention. They were already dead. The fifth orc was a concern. It was another of the hulking armored brutes. This one wasn't quite as massively plated as the others Krivan had encountered on Lepidus Prime. The armor bore enough spikes to turn its shoulder guards into weapons in their own right, but it wasn't powered. The orc, though, was huge. It didn't need an exoskeleton when its own frame was so gigantic. One hand wielded a clip-fed pistol the size of a bolter. The other carried a thick, short blade. The monster almost reached the ceiling in the car, but it was prepared for close-quarters fighting. It had decided to leave the ranged combat to its underlings and to the train's defences. It thought ahead. That made it dangerous. Krivan lunged at the war boss, slashing at its exposed face with his lightning claws. The orc took a step back, tucked its chin in, and raised its pistol. It fired a volley of bullets at Krivan and Thane. The rounds were huge. They punched into the interior walls of the car. Four of them slammed into Krivan's chest. His armor held, but the inertia of the blows was enormous. They stopped his charge. The other orcs brought their weapons to bear as their leader emptied its clip. Krivan ducked beneath the swing of the chieftain's blade. He struck out with his right arm and impaled the nearest greenskin through the chest. The orc howled and dropped its gun. Krivan hauled the orc in and hurled it at the chieftain. The big orc's blade sliced into the minion's ribs and stuck. Behind Krivan, Thane took down the other orc on the right with bolter fire. He trained his servo arm's plasma cutter on the left-hand enemies. One died immediately, the upper half of its head sheared off. The other pulled the pin on a long-handled grenade. Krivan saw the gesture in the corner of his eye. He had fractions of a second to brace himself before the grenade blew up in the orc's hand, setting off all the other explosives the greenskin carried. Inside the confined space of the car, the blast was huge. These were no mere frag grenades. They were another product of the orc engineer's obscene inspiration. The devices were as much incendiary as fragmenting, and they filled the car with flame and shrapnel. The explosions scorched the surface of Krivan's armor and knocked him sideways. Thane, closer to the center of the blast, was knocked to the ground. The orc chieftain roared through the fire, flesh smoldering, and brought his blade down in a two-handed chop. Krivan brought his left arm up to block. The orc hit him with strength to shatter steel. The blade cut through the ceramite and into his forearm. He yanked his arm down, dragging the weapon with it, and punched forwards with his right claws. The orc dropped the blade and reared back, but not before Krivan put out its left eye. The injury drove the orc into a paroxysm of fury. It came back hard at Krivan, proving just how dangerous it was, by channeling the rage into savage but skilled combat. It rammed him with its shoulder. One of the spikes on the plate stabbed through Krivan's gorget and into the side of his neck. The orc knocked him back against the wall, grabbed its blade, and attacked again. It used the blade one-handed now, stabbing and slashing with its right hand while it hammered at Krivan with the mailed left fist. Krivan parried and jabbed. He drew more blood, but the orc absorbed damage like a sponge. Somehow its mass and its energy of rage took the place of stronger, more complete armor. It was fast, too, much faster than should have been possible for a being of its bulk. It was another dark wonder of the orcs of Lepidus, a serious threat that had been transformed into a monster. Behind it, Thane had recovered. He aimed his plasma cutter at the combatants. The end of the servo arm swiveled back and forth as Krivan and the orc slashed, blocked, lunged, and grappled.
"Shadow Captain," the tech marine asked.
"I have this," Krivan grunted as the orc landed a heavy blow against the side of his helmet.
"Do what we came for."
If the engineer had heard the explosion, it might be preparing a counter. The orcs had little regard for each other's survival. He would not be surprised to learn that the locomotive had a cannon that could fire through the car interiors. Thane moved to the far end of the car. There was no door. The land train's maker did not trust its passengers to have easy access to the locomotive. Thane turned the plasma cutter on the wall. Krivan forced the orc back with a flurry of slashes. The chieftain blocked his claws from tearing anything vital, but the brute was covered in its own blood. Krivan swung up with his left hand and caught the underside of the orc's right arm. He dragged the blades along the arm, slicing off flesh, feeling them grind against bone. He gave his fist a harsh jerk and severed the orc's right hand at the wrist. The chieftain howled its outrage and stumbled back to the other side of the car. Krivan used the second's pause to vox the other group.
"Brothers," he asked.
"A large contingent, Shadow Captain," Akralas answered. "There were too many sentries to kill at once. They raised the alarm. The whole force on this train is converging on our position."
"Do what you must," Krivan answered,
and then the orc was attacking him again. It lunged with its left arm outstretched. It did not try to strike him. Instead, it sprayed a vast quantity of blood at Krivan, completely covering his helmet. Through its lenses, he saw nothing but blood. He wiped them clear, but for a vital moment, he could not see the orc. He swung with his right hand, trying to ward off an attack. The orc came in low. It rammed its blade up inside of his left arm, piercing the armor's seam. Pain flashed down the length of his arm. At the end of the car, Thane finished cutting through the meter-thick metal. He kicked the wall down. The cut slab fell onto the coupling between the locomotive and the car, then to the ground. Krivan propelled himself forwards as if catapulted. He slammed into the brute. His momentum carried them both past Thane and through the gap in the wall. They fell on the coupling. The grinding mechanism bit through the orc's armor and seized its flesh. It beat at Krivan, its blows still heavy but panicked now, losing precision as it reacted to its danger. Krivan shoved himself away from the orc. He reached back and grabbed the ragged edge of the hole to pull himself back to his feet. The chieftain raged and struggled, but the mechanism held it fast and pulled it deeper into the gears. Krivan now saw purpose in the excess of the construction. The cars were not linked by simple couplings. They were linked by traps. They were yet another of the train's defenses. The orc was falling victim to the engineer's designs. Steadying himself, he stomped on the orc's chest, driving it further into the hungry metal. The greenskin's howls of rage became screams. Bones snapped, flesh tore. The monster's body was rendered bit by bit to pulp. For a surprisingly long time, it struggled to reach Krivan and drag him down to the same fate. Then it was gone, the metal shards of its armor bouncing off the machinery to the ground. Thane joined Krivan at the gap. Behind them, they could hear the battle against the other orcs still raging. The snarls and sounds of gunfire blended with the raucous beat of the engine and the clanking of treads. There was still no sign that the orc engineer had realized anything was wrong. If there was any way that the troops in the cars could communicate with the locomotive, they weren't using it. The engineer was still consumed with the challenges before it. Ahead, the sky was a lightning storm of war. Rockets and shells flew from the train in answer to those that surrounded it with a halo of fire. The machine was moving uphill now. As Krivan stepped back into the car, he heard a massive detonation. The big cannon on the rear car had fired. Krivan saw the comet streak of its shell arc upwards. It had been fired at a target far beyond the attacking Raven Guard. It had, he realized, been fired at the city. A few moments later, there was a flash from beyond the horizon, reflecting against the low clouds. Reclamation had taken its first hit. "Do it quickly," Krivan said to Thane. The tech marine trained his plasma cutter on the coupling. As it came apart, the machinery flailed like the orc had, pistons and chains and gears flying apart with centripetal violence. "This obscenity is an insult to the Omnisire," Thane said. His tone was even, the venom present only in the words themselves. But to the degree that Krivan had ever known Thane to express satisfaction of any kind, he was doing so now, as he set about cutting the land train's throat. The coupling gave a final tearing death cry before the flare of the plasma cutter, and the link between the locomotive and the cars was severed. For a moment, the two sections of the train continued moving forwards. The cars lost speed quickly, their momentum drained away by mass and friction. The treads slowed to a halt. The locomotive pulled ahead, its own speed increasing. It advanced another 50 meters before it began to slow. After another 10, it stopped. Thane said, "The defenses are still operational." Krivan nodded. The turrets on the cars had not stopped firing. The big cannon boomed again. He jumped to the ground and looked up. He saw the flash and crackle of dissipating energy as Raven Guard attacks were neutralized along the entire length of the train. "The force field is still up, too," he said. Whatever power system the orc engineer was using, it was not dependent on the physical connection of the land train to work, and the locomotive had not gone far enough to break the energy link. No matter. It was the engine and the being inside that counted. Once they were dead, the rest of the train would follow. And the advance had been stopped. That much was important. As if to contradict him, the big cannon fired once more. The flash of the detonation came a few seconds later. Reclamation was hurt, and it would bleed until the engineer was destroyed.
"Brother Akralas," he voxed.
He ran towards the locomotive, Thane followed.
Holding, Shadow Captain.
His discipline hid his pain. Krivan heard it anyway.
We have lost Brother Rival.
You are wounded.
We both are.
Your evaluation?
The orcs have the numbers.
The statement was not a surrender. It was mere accuracy. Akralas was letting him know what was inevitable unless the circumstances changed. It fell to him and Thane to make that change.
How long? Krivan asked.
As long as we can.
Thank you, brother.
The orc tech was still in its blister. It was looking back as Krivan and Thane raced towards the engine. It was very still, its revel arrested. Krivan could feel the rage in its glare, and he rejoiced that the beast was at last experiencing the possibility of defeat. He and Thane drew nearer. 30 meters away, the massive hulk of the locomotive loomed before them, the blister no longer visible. The defenses lashed at the Space Marines. Corner turrets turned away from the diversionary attack and pointed downwards. They rotated back and forth, blanketing the area with shells. They were not aiming, which told Krivan that the orc couldn't see them either. It was trying to take them out by destroying the entire region to the rear of the engine. The turrets pumped out their high explosives with the speed of heavy stubbers. The direction of their fire crossed and recrossed. Krivan could see the movement of the guns, could tell where the shells would land. He and Thane jerked left and right, their race now as much an evasion as it was an assault. They could not avoid the shells entirely. They were buffeted by the blasts. The engineer's blows chipped away at their strength as they closed with the mobile fortress. They ran through an exploding landscape, fountains of earth and stone erupting on all sides. The engineer's guns did not stop them. They reached the locomotive. There was no door at the rear. They began moving clockwise around the engine, looking for the entrance. The cannon fire continued. The engineer must have had a sensor array of some kind, however crude, because the turrets followed their movement. The guns could not aim straight down. Krivan and Thane were safe as long as they stayed almost flush with the side of the locomotive. The left-hand flank of the beast was far from featureless. It was covered in 2-meter-long spikes pointing in every direction. The construction was monolithic, overlapping metal plates welded and riveted to excess. There was no entrance on this side, nor was there on the front, though the jaws of the locomotive looked as if they might well be functional.
It would be unfortunate if the only way in is a hatch on the roof, Krivan said.
The engineer would have a free hand with the turrets in that case. The Raven Guard wouldn't last long enough to effect a breach.
The greenskin is primitive, Thane said. So are its works, but there is dangerous cunning here. I doubt the beast would give itself only one possible egress.
The force field flashed and crackled. Krivan was surrounded by wars that were simultaneously close and distant. His brother's assault was a great thunder, but it stopped just short of the land train as if he were seeing the dissolve into static of a hololithic transmission. Several dozen meters away, the rest of his squad fought an army. He knew this, but his only evidence was vox communication. The sounds of that conflict were drowned out by the din of rockets and cannon. And somewhere further out, so distant at this moment that the struggle was almost mythical, the Eldar fought another army. The final outcome of all those battles hinged on what he and Thane did in the next few minutes. On the right flank, Thane pointed to a metal slab near the bottom of the locomotive's skirt. It was smaller than all the other pieces and was an almost even rectangle in shape. A single spike stuck out of the center.
Here, Thane said. He examined the welding. None on the outside, he said. From the inside only.
No one in, but it can get out, Krivan said. No trust among the greenskins.
None, Thane agreed.
He started cutting along the outline of the entrance frame. The plasma beam sliced through the seal in a few seconds. Thane gripped both sides of the door. Krivan readied his bolter. Thane yanked the door free. The entrance exploded. A huge blast of flame billowed out of the train's interior. It smashed Thane back, picking him up and hurling him across the blasted landscape. Krivan had been standing a few meters to the side. He was brushed by the explosion, and that was still strong enough to knock him to the ground, armor smoking. The flames dissipated quickly. Krivan risked looking in the entrance. He saw a narrow tunnel snaking its way deeper into the machine. On both sides of it were the immense gears, pistons, and ill-defined mechanical follies that were the orcs' stock in trade. There did not appear to be any further traps. Krivan looked back at where Thane had landed. The tech marine had ploughed a furrow into the ground when he had hit. He had been standing in the mouth of a giant cannon, just as it had fired.
Thane!
Krivan called over the vox. The Raven Guard's rune was flickering red in Krivan's display. Thane's voice was weak. It could have been mistaken for a burst of static, but the sounds of a broken machine became words.
Victorus out mortis, the tech marine said. We will have victory, Krivan promised.
He entered the locomotive. The passage took him through the interior of a monster's heart. The air itself pulsed with the arrhythmic beat of huge mechanisms. There was barely enough room for him to walk without scraping against the tangle of heavy machinery on either side. The vehicle was not advancing, but it was very much alive, waiting only for the command of its master to rumble over any resistance. Vast breaths of steam gasped periodically from vents and nozzles placed at odd angles in haphazard locations. Halfway across the width of the locomotive, the passage turned right. On both sides now, Krivan saw pistons the size of a Predator tank's cannon. There were multiple sets driving gigantic gears. There was little in the iron phantasmagoria that made any kind of sense. Krivan could not imagine how the grinding work around him made the engine function. Against all reason, it did. The noise was enormous. Hissing and clanking and complaining metal filled the uneven pauses between the beats. Krivan didn't worry about stealth. He couldn't hear his own footsteps, which meant he wouldn't be able to hear the approach of the orc tech either. He walked with Bolter pointing forward, eager to send the green skin aberration to oblivion. There was no sign of the engineer. The passage ran forwards most of the length of the locomotive. It ended at a ladder that went up 3 meters to a second level. Here the way was even more cramped. The restless, groaning, shuddering web of machinery pressed in, surrounding him. He did not feel as if he were moving through the interior of an engine. He could see individual components whose function he could understand, ones that had a clear purpose of propulsion or the production of energy. But so much more of the engineering seemed to exist for its own sake. Perhaps, Krivan thought, it was yet another symptom of the supercharged nature of these orcs. Even the drive that led to the construction of monstrosities like the land train had been exaggerated. The Ork Tech had built and built and built, unable to stop. And the end result was a creation whose enormous excess meant that it was as indestructible as it was nonsensical. Still no sign of the Ork. Krivan advanced halfway down the tunnel of gears and steam, then stopped. He knew where his enemy was, the blister. The Ork controlled all aspects of the train from there, including all the defenses. There would be no reason for the greenskin to leave that redoubt. If it had guarded so elaborately against attack so far, there would be other death traps ahead. Krivan wasn't interested in fighting this battle on the engineer's terms. He would make the field of engagement his own. He would show the Ork that there were shadows even here where it felt safest. He examined the machinery more closely before deciding that there was no way of predicting the consequences of what he did next. The prospect pleased him. He would turn disorder and the storm of war back on the Ork. He took a frag grenade from his clip and threw it to his left, deep into the gears. It bounced back and forth off the metal organs of the locomotive, then dropped towards the first level. Krivan lost sight of it. The detonation was muffled, barely audible over the clanks and growls and hisses. For a few seconds, there was no change to the din, as if the locomotive had swallowed the grenade without notice. Then a different sort of grinding began. Its pitch started high and went higher. It was joined by a rising chorus of metal complaints as components scraped against each other and the perverse workings of Ork technology began to go awry. Krivan threw a crack grenade to the right. When it went off, its light and heat were also smothered by the intricacies of the machines. But its damage was felt, and the metallic shrieks grew louder yet. Live steam filled the passageway. Krivan heard the angry buzz of multiple electrical shorts nearby. He smelled smoke. He couldn't hear the crackle of flame, but his readouts indicated a rise in temperature. Visibility across all the energy spectrums fell to zero. As the locomotive writhed in machinic pain, it was filled with shadow. If the Ork remained in the blister, Krivan would take the engine apart with his bare hands until the engineer had nothing but its hiding place left. Krivan started moving forwards again, certain that he had forced his enemy to join him. He was right. The Ork dropped down in front of him from a tube in the ceiling. It was shorter than he was, but only because it was bent over from the weight of the giant harness on its back. Violet energy blazed from the towering coils of the harness, distorted light fighting the darkness that Krivan had claimed for his own. Its left arm was a huge prosthesis. In its right, it held a gun that looked like a twisted, sawn-off las cannon. The Shadow Captain fired, point-blank. The mass reactive shells slammed into the beast's force field. The violet flashed brighter and the shells disintegrated. The Ork didn't even blink. It grinned and pulled the trigger of its own weapon. A beam of focused energy hit Krivan in the chest. It threw him back down the passage, embedding him in machinery at the far end. Damage runes flared. His pauldron was cracked and smoking. His power pack struggled against the massive spike in temperature. Servo motors stuttered, and for a moment his right arm shook back and forth. He steeled himself, fighting down the neurological chaos that raced up his spine and through his cortex. Will, strength, and discipline worked in concert to return mobility to him. The engineer was advancing towards him. Dark lighting arced about the muzzle of the gun as it recharged. Krivan lurched forward, tearing himself free of the nest of wreckage and Mag locking his bolter to his thigh. Pipes burst, gas flooded the space. Krivan threw a crack grenade before the orc. It stepped back, perhaps on instinct, perhaps because it recognized the damage that was about to happen to the floor. The lightning around the gun became a sharp flash, then stopped. The engineer aimed it at Krivan. The grenade went off. The heat ignited the gas. Everything became light and flame. The filters in Krivan's lenses dimmed, protecting his sight with momentary darkness. He didn't need to see. He had already chosen his target. He leapt to the right, into a gap between two large gear wheels. Behind him, he heard the blast of the orc's weapon, the shot going wild. There were more explosions. The rumble of the machinery was giving way to the roar of fire and the ever-rising screams of metal and energy and movement racing to destruction. His lenses cleared, and Krivan moved deeper into the machine. There was more light now, flashing and angry, creating shadows that raged like black flame. Krivan joined them. He was the dark that moved through the orc's stronghold. He was the dark that even this green skin would have to fear. He was the dark that vanquished. Krivan advanced more by feel than by sight. He grabbed a piston, let it carry him away from the wheels, released it to drop onto two more that moved in opposite directions. As great as the mass of his power armor was, the components of the machinery were more than strong enough to support him. The very strength of the locomotive's construction was making its gradual destruction all the more violent. Spider in a moving, unraveling web, Krivan made his way forward. He drew level with the orc tech. He caught glimpses of the brute through the smoke and clashing gears. It was looking for him, moving back and forth on a small strip of floor between the ladder and the hole created by the grenade. It was snarling, and its attention seemed to be divided between its search and rage at the spreading damage. Krivan kept watching and kept moving. The engineer's movements became more frantic. It was growing anxious, as it should. It was surrounded by shadows, and one of them was coming to kill it. For several meters, Krivan's access to the orc was blocked. Then he reached a periodic gap. He stood on a crankshaft whose rotation was becoming more and more erratic. Ahead of him, a giant fan turned. Its blades were serrated for no reason beyond the orcish need for violence in all things. Its rotation was sluggish, and it had already lost one blade. Every couple of seconds, the broken section went by. If he moved quickly, he could get through. If his timing was off, he could be caught and dragged down into the growing mangle of iron and fire. Krivan waited through a few revolutions. There was little regularity to them. The fan's rhythm was broken. Nearby, Krivan could hear more of the mechanism giving way. There was another gas leak, another explosion. The interior shook with the ecstasy of dissolution. Krivan held himself ready, eyed the fan, and chose his moment. He threw himself forward while a blade was still blocking his view. He hit the fan's position as the gap appeared. He shot into the passageway, shadow and hammer, and slammed into the engineer. Its force field repelled all forms of energy, including the kinetic. But Krivan gambled that a certain velocity was needed for the effect to be triggered. If nothing passed through, the greenskin would long since have suffocated. As he and his squad had penetrated the train's shield, He now broke through the engineer's personal defense, smashing the orc against the machinery on the other side of the tunnel. The engineer reacted with surprising speed, smashing its power claw against him. The fingers were tools. Cutters and drills burned into the side of his armor. He held fast against the assault for a moment, then let himself be hurled to the left. The orc growled with satisfaction. It took a step forwards. Krivan kept going left, coming around the engineer's flank. He stabbed at the harness with his right hand. His lightning claws shattered one of the coils. Violet energy lashed out. It struck his arm and traveled up his spine. He took in the electric pain and swung his left fist in. He destroyed a second coil and plunged the claws deep into the harness, through the orc's back. The orc howled. It tried to turn and shake him off. It couldn't reach him. Keeping his right claws embedded in the green skin's back, Krivan brought the left ones down again and then again. The coils exploded. Krivan was bathed in an electrical storm. Pain raked his nerves. His body sought to betray him and flail in the grip of the chaotic discharge. He stabbed again. Bursts strong enough to incinerate a grox shook him. He grappled with a mass of desperate fury. Another explosion shook the interior. He almost lost his grip on the orc, and his left fist hesitated before the descent. The engineer brought its right arm up and aimed the gun over its shoulder. Krivan stared down the barrel. He changed the angle of his blow. He brought the claws into the side of the body of the gun. He breached the weapon just as the orc pulled the trigger. A volcano erupted in the center of the locomotive. The engineer was vaporized by its creation. Krivan flew, a burning mass, into the machinery. Disintegration and avalanche and molten fury surrounded him. They tried to tear a hole in the world, to smash his sense of direction, his will, his consciousness. He refused them and dropped into the maw of the destruction, kicking and punching through hungry debris. He was no longer in the midst of a mechanism. He was in an iron gale. He was buffeted by shrapnel twice his size, seized by explosions and geysers of flame. He kept his sense of direction. He was knocked off his feet. He had to crawl beneath collapses. He fought his way through the vortex of an impossible creation, finally succumbing to its own irrationality. He stayed true to his course. Severed fiber bundles rendered his armor heavy. His movements grew sluggish, precision lost. The temperature regulator had shut down. He didn't know how much longer his power unit would function. If it died, so would he, his armor becoming a coffin inside the tomb of the locomotive. And there, ahead, a glimpse of light that did not flicker. Day shining through the egress. He pulled himself forward, managed to rise to his feet as the weight of the wreckage on his back lessened. He heard something very large crack overhead. He tried to run, but moved at a lethargic stumble instead. He reached for the sides of the doorway, grabbed them, and propelled himself through as tons of metal crashed down behind him. He fell to the ground. Victory, when on his knees, would be as unacceptable as defeat, and he forced himself to stand once more. Moving at a glacial pace, feet dragging, he walked away from the locomotive towards the spot where Thane still lay.
"Brother Akrolas," he voxed.
Silence.
"Dvarax?"
Nothing. He looked to the right. Orcs were emerging from the last of the cars. There were many, but many were injured, and they were moving with rare caution. They were gazing at the locomotive. Krivan turned to see its end. Its armor was cracking like an egg, an angry molten red shining through the fissures. Incredibly, it still had power. The defense turrets and the cannon were firing, though without direction. The moment of the great death came. The locomotive did not explode, but a sun blazed through its wounds. The machinic scream was almost sentient. Then the glow was that of ordinary fire. The engine seemed to slump on itself, transformed from monster to wreck. And suddenly there was calm. Shooting and movement ceased. The sky over the train cleared, the shimmer of the force field gone.
"Eighth Company," Krivan said, "destroy this abomination and all its vermin."
The orcs fought back as the wrath of the Raven Guard descended upon them. They did not fight long.